This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, October 27, 2023. And today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney. I'm down in the Arlington area. Actually, we're staying in a hotel in Fort Worth. Taylor and Sarah are back in Connecticut. And Taylor, I can tell you're excited for the start of the World Series, because in the note you sent out last night, you had like 50 exclamation points. You're like, let's go! Start of the World Series! Let's do it!
I have like a really tortured relationship with baseball right now. You know, no one's going to cry for me because it's my job, but I am so tired staying up late.
Oh, no. I don't know. I can tell where you're going, but go ahead.
It's like on the one hand, I'm like tired and exhausted from staying up late and doing the podcast and just being overworked generally. But then at the same time, I freaking love watching baseball. I love when the stakes are high. The World Series is here. What could be better? So I'm sure my mood will change on like Monday afternoon, but for right now, we're riding high.
Nice. Well, so there's a little bit, all the exclamation points is talking yourself into some getting fired up.
Yep. We're hyping ourselves up over here. We ride, Buster. Let's go.
Sarah, that was your strategy during the Phillies series against the Diamondbacks, right?
Yep. And you know, that ended poorly, but that's okay.
She's so over it.
Lifelong Rangers fan now.
Oh my God. You sound so sad. A lifelong Rangers fan. There we go. All right. As we said, the World Series will start today. We've got the Diamondbacks. We've got the Rangers. And on Thursday, in the media day, Zach Gallen spoke to reporters about what it's like to make the World Series 2 years after the Diamondbacks lost 110 games.
Yeah, I try not to think about 2 years ago. Those are some dark times in Arizona. You know, with me, I was injured for a good part of that year, and then as a team, it just didn't turn out the way we wanted to. But yeah, it's still surreal. I mean, it kind of started to hit me a little bit on the way to the ballpark today. You know, having the escort here, just thinking like, you know, 730 days ago, whatever it was, like, who would have really thought we would be here right now? This soon, this quickly. So yeah, it's I'm just proud of the guys in the clubhouse, the guys that have walked through the dark times that were here, and then the young guys that have come up and just stepped up right away and kind of inserted themselves into this, you know, success we're having. It's been it's incredible.
Yeah, it's funny he mentioned the escort. Guys, the other day after one of the Rangers and Astros series, I was walking from the ballpark back to the hotel, and I noticed like they had this escort that was like the whole Texas National Guard taking the Astros back to their team hotel. So the Diamondbacks are getting that type of treatment. He was asked how much the doubters are fueling the Diamondbacks.
If you're in any sort of competitive field and somebody tells you can't do something or they think somebody can do it better than you, I think that's kind of a main reason probably why you're where you are today. So yeah, I think for us, it's not necessarily that, I don't know, I'm speaking for me, but like, I don't think it was necessarily that people thought that we couldn't do it. It was just that no one expected us to be here. And it was like, we're here, we might as well just see what happens. Let's just, you know, and then, yeah, I mean, you find little things along the way that kind of just fire you up and just motivate you, really. And we just got guys in there with quiet confidence of like, all right, we'll just prove you wrong. Let's just see what happens. We know what we can do. We had a really good first half, and it's like, we know it's in there. So let's just see what happens.
One of the Arizona doubters, Chris Russo, Mad Dog, famously said that he was going to retire if the Diamondbacks beat Sarah's Phillies. Well, that happened, and Torrey Lovello's carrying some receipts.
Stephen A. Smith, you're my boy. You're my boy. And I need you to hold him accountable, okay? I need you to keep going at him every single day. Don't let it stop. But a deal's a deal. I agree. Like, you can't back out of that one, Mad Dog. You got to do something. I don't know if you're talking about TV, radio, but I do like Howard Stern's thought about walking with a billboard saying that I am, whatever, a liar and an a-hole in Midtown Manhattan for half a day. That'll do it for me, but I ain't going to forgive you until you do something unbelievable. Maybe show up here and say you're sorry to the entire team.
I love Torrey getting involved, right? Little TV production, getting it. And first off, a couple points. Torrey Lovello is a funny guy, and you know, he's just totally having fun with this thing. But he also, as I've told you guys, he's from this production family. His dad was the executive producer of the show Hee Haw. So I think Torrey knows a good show when he potentially could see one, Taylor.
He knows how to get the crowd fired up. I mean, this would be a great, and Mad Dog does too. I lost a little bit of respect for Mad Dog for not retiring on the spot, but could be a good bit for a championship parade, perhaps, or spring training should they lose.
Yeah, you know, or he shows up and like bows down and, you know, puts his right. career on a plate and said, please, what should I do, and have some fun with it. There's an opportunity there for sure, especially if the Diamondbacks go on and win the World Series. Nathan Eovaldi starts game one for the Rangers, and he talked about approaching the World Series start.
Obviously, it is the World Series. I understand everything that's on the line. It's, you know, you got to win or you go home, and you don't want to come this far just to come this far. Being four wins away to achieve our goal, that's what we're here to do, and I'm going to treat it like any other start, same routine, same preparation and things like that. Obviously, a little bit more preparation, I'd say, going into this one, but, you know, it's more so trying to control the adrenaline and the emotions out there, make sure from the first pitch on I'm trying to settle in as fast as I can into the game to go out there and try to go as long as I can.
Rangers manager Bruce Bochy talked about being underdogs in every series so far in this postseason.
We really didn't talk about it. We weren't concerned with what people thought of us. You know, we thought we were good. We thought we belonged, and we thought we could win, and that's how we looked at it. So didn't really get concerned with, you know, what the outside or the big pundits or experts thought about us, and so that's how we approached it.
Couple of other notes. Bill Miller and Alfonso Marquez will be joined by five first-time World Series umpire when the Rangers play the Diamondbacks starting on Friday night. Bill Miller, longtime umpire. So that'll be I met him when he was in Class A. I'm looking forward to this. This will be fun to watch him. Former President George Bush is going to throw out the first pitch before game one of the World Series. He, of course, threw out the first pitch during the 2001 World Series, which was won by the Diamondbacks. I think that's the most memorable first pitch ever because it was in the aftermath of 9/11. And not a surprise, Dusty Baker announced after we taped our podcast on Wednesday that he's retiring after 26 seasons as the Major League Baseball manager. He spoke with the reporters on Thursday.
Retiring from the field here in Houston, I haven't made up my mind yet what I'm going to do or where I'm going to go. First, I'm going to go home, talk to my daughter that thinks that she's my mother, and spend some time with my grandkids and let the Lord tell me where to go and what to do.
And I know he wants to reacquaint himself with a couple of hunting dogs that he got last offseason. So he didn't think that they necessarily recognize him. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, I got to say, Zach Gallen sounds when he's talking about the playoffs and he's like, oh, we're just going to go and see what happens. He's acting like it's like a casual, like he's going to like a going out of business sale and he's looking for an ottoman. Like, oh, we're just going to go and see what happens. What?
You know what that was?
What?
That was media weariness. Like he yeah. is so sick of us. And I don't mean to criticize him at all
for
that, but you can hear it like, oh my God, I know we were bad 2 years ago. This is the 80th time I've answered this question. I just want to go and play the World Series. Like the being in the games, I think, is a respite for these guys by the time they get through dealing with a bunch of idiots like me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're answering the same questions and have been for a month. I get it. All right. In terms of things to promote, the College Game Day podcast is out now. You can watch it on YouTube. It's our pick show. They're Stanford Steve and Reese Davis picking the week 9 games. I think we picked 8 of them. Good episode for sure. Check that out. The College Game Day podcast on this podcasting platform and on YouTube.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck.
The legend.
On its way. Out of here.
Boog Ciambi on Baseball Tonight.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Ciambi, who is calling play-by-play for the World Series on ESPN Radio for the first time. Boog, are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go. I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
All right. Speaking of legends, the guy who was in your chair that you're going to be filling tonight, for many years, was just nominated for the Baseball Hall of Fame's broadcasting honor.
That would be
Dan Shulman. Tell me about, give me a little perspective on Dan, because I texted him the other day when I saw this. It was very cool.
Yeah, I mean, deserving. He's been one of the elite play-by-play guys for a long time on both radio and TV, which I love. Yeah, guy that hammers a big call. He's got the classic voice, but just he just has the stuff, right? In the big moments, he delivers big calls, but there's also an element of just your routine calling a game, listening to him tell stories and call a ground ball to second. He's pretty brilliant. I would say he's, since I've been doing it, he's been as good as anybody around.
Yeah. Really excited for him. I'm sure I've told you this story before, but I'm going to tell it again. You're talking about his voice, in all those years I did Sunday Night Baseball with him, being around it and hearing that voice all the time. And then one Sunday we were working on some E60 and they needed me to do some tracks. From the booth, and I go to sit in the chair to do the tracking when we arrive at the ballpark for Sunday Night Baseball, and Dan is right behind me, and I'm just like, and I've got this crappy little voice, and I'm just like, Dan, you need to leave. Like, I'm going to be so self-conscious that you're going to be sitting here listening to me do tracking. Does that make sense?
It's one of these things where it's like, look, I can even relate. I will get from people, you have a good voice. And it's like, okay, but when you're talking about the top of the top, which is the type of voice that Dan has, it's a little bit different. I get you.
Yeah. Can you imagine cooking a meal for one of those chefs who are on television?
Right, that's it.
That would be so self-conscious.
And it's just one of those things that resonates. I've told the story before. My guy growing up was Harry Callis. And the first time I interviewed him, it felt like I was, Harry, I was wondering if, but I, the first time that I heard him, I was in line for food in the press room. So it's like, I didn't even know it was him. And I just heard, I'll have some lasagna green beans. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh, right. Well, two other legends also were nominated. There are 10, there's a group of 10 and we're not going to go through them all, but two other legends who were nominated, Dwayne Kuiper, Mike Kruko, who do the Giants games. I really hope that the Hall of Fame, which makes up its own rules, gets out of its own way and says, you know what? If one of them's going in, we're putting them both in together. Yeah. I don't know how the voting is done. I don't know if that's even possible, but please put them both in together. Yes?
Yes. It's funny. I saw you. I think it was you. I mean, somebody, I saw that said, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, look, those two guys are the definition of partnership. They're best friends. I love seeing them. I don't know that there's a group of guys that I enjoy seeing more than when I get to go to San Francisco and see Kipe and Kruk. And they've also been great to me from when I first came into the league. They're fun. They're funny. And then here's another thing. I know this may sound weird, but you can connect on this. Look, they're former players. They love it. They love the game. And it's not the case for everybody that played. And they have a line, both of them, that says, I used to have the first best job in the world, and now I have the second best job in the world. Going from player to broadcaster. So they're just magnificent, those two.
Well, when I saw the news about Kite, I don't know if you know this, but he has a history with Holstein cows. His grandfather had a herd of Holstein cows, and we always go back and forth on cows. And so I texted him, and I said, you know, if you renounce, because we had Jersey cows, and I texted him, I said, if you renounce Holstein cows, I think you'll be a slam dunk to be voted in. And he just texted back, said, Holstein suck. And I'm like, okay, that's it. You're in. Like he picked the right alley right there. All right. That had nothing to do with anything. But
that's fine. I like it. I'm familiar with his dairy farming ways. And he's a kid from Wisconsin.
Right. Exactly. All right. You saw the Diamondbacks in September. And I remember you saying to me at that time, look, I think this team could win the World Series.
I don't remember saying that.
No, well, you didn't. I'm just kidding. Of course, no one thought that was a possibility. What do you see in this matchup?
Athletic. Both these teams really catch it. You know, they're good. I would say if you hooked everybody up to a lie detector test, I think they're probably, they've advanced the schedule for where they thought they'd get here. I mean, but let's be clear, with Evaldi on the mound tonight, they're going to start four guys that are 23. That's pretty ridiculous. So, you know, in terms of their position playing lineup, yeah, they're super talented. Now, I will tell you this. This has been written, and I like this, for those of us that cover these things all the time and in multiple sports, and you hear the, you know, nobody believed in us.
Right.
And it's so tired. It is so tired, as a saying. Like, there's nothing, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm sure that at some point, like the Yankees, when they were winning all those World Series, were saying it, or, you know, the Dodgers winning 106 games or something like that. But in this case, yeah, nobody believed in the Diamondbacks. It is actually true. Nobody believed. And so I get it. But I also would say, let's not go bananas here, you know, in terms of, I mean, I saw them a lot at the end of the year, and I think I saw them seven times in September, and they beat up on the Cubs. Well, they won one more game than the Cubs, and they finished with a negative run differential. They're really talented. I think that it's fun. And it's also, this is what expanded playoffs is now. It's the NCAA tournament to some extent.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I agree with you. And I also agree with what Carl Ravitch said on the podcast the other day, that in 2017, nobody knew, really knew. Casual fans didn't know who Jose Altuve was, and casual fans didn't know who George Springer was and Carlos Correa. And now these guys are stars.
That's a really good point. That is absolutely so. People didn't really know who those guys were, and they found out.
And they're going to find out about Corbin Carroll. Yes,
that's right.
And
I will tell you this. The one thing that is quite interesting about, again, there's just some randomness to this. If I presented to you, okay, Buster, guess what? The Diamondbacks are going to make the World Series. That's what we know. And then I said, okay, so what are your best guesses on how they did it? Your first guess would be, well, Corbin Carroll had to tear it up in the postseason. No, not really. Well, Zach Gallen must have absolutely shoved every single start that he's had in the postseason.
No,
not really. So it's amazing how these things can happen. It's like, not only are they surprising, but it's not like, you know, they've just gotten a little bit of everything from everywhere. They're a very good base running team. They catch it really well. Both these teams catch it well. I like that. I dig on the defensive side of things. So, and then, you know, a bullpen that was for, you know, 4.5 months bad. It was a bad bullpen. It was, I think they were 24th over that stretch till right, you know, the 25th of August. They were like 24th in bullpen ERA. And from, you know, late August on, they had the third best bullpen ERA. And now Thompson, Ginkle, and Seawald. And I'm sorry, I'm blat, but I would also tell you, if you can't root for Paul Sewald, I can't help you. If you can't get down with that, I just can't, because that dude, what he's gone through, the journey, et cetera, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And they kind of remind you of the Nationals in 2019, who had the worst bullpen in baseball for a lot of that year. And at the end, they were the team with the dog pile. Yeah. I think you would co-sign on this because, sometimes when, if I say Derek Jeter, has more hits than anybody else in the postseason, 200, there's a little bit of an eye roll that I feel internally when I do that, because of course, Derek Jeter got to play in a lot more postseason games than the guys in the 20s and 30s and 40s. But the flip side of that, which is where I'm leading to what the Diamondbacks are chasing right now, I think because they've had to go through multiple rounds, I think they have a chance to go down in history as the most improbable champion, because an 84-win team had to go against the Brewers, and they had to survive the Dodgers, and they had to survive the Phillies. If they beat the Rangers, it's the most improbable champion of baseball history, with all due respect to the 1914 Braves and the 69 Mets and the 88 Dodgers. Pretty remarkable the Diamondbacks would come through all that.
Totally agree. I could not agree more that if they were to win, it would be as unlikely a champion as we've ever seen. And I think you laid out exactly why. It's not just third fewest wins for a World Series team in a 162-game season. I think that the one thing that I've underestimated, and now we've had it happen two straight years, so my theory clearly stinks, but the one thing I thought was, even though expanded playoffs means that the elite teams can get knocked out, I thought that it would make it harder for the lower-seeded teams to have to do it. Like, I thought you could knock off maybe one team, maybe two teams, but I didn't think the lower seeded teams would be able to run through and knock off four teams, or at least three teams and then make it tight. But, you're basically talking about in the National League the last 2 years, the last team to get in is the representative in the World Series.
So I think you'd agree with me on this, that, over the course of time, the impact of the managers, generally speaking, has been overstated. I do feel like that, as one Hall of Famer said to me last week in regards to Bruce Bochy, this when he manages, the players are going to decide the games. He's not going to make some terrible gaffe and screw up so that the manager is the difference maker. What do you see as, the experience and the expertise of a Bochy, that kind of role playing in a series?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a steadiness. I still am more of a believer in, I don't think that the tactical stuff is the gig. I think the gig is managing people and keeping guys' heads on straight and consistency of decision-making, and that subtlety and how it affects guys' ability to feel like they're in the best possible place to succeed. I think that we probably overdo the tactical stuff and forget that a run in the eighth counts the same as a run in the third. And we don't do as good a job, isolating those things. But Bochy's Cooperstown bound. And I think that when you're talking about managing people and tactically, and what are we talking about when we're talking about tactically? Let's be clear. We're really talking about manipulating a bullpen. And I think that one of the things that he's shown throughout is an ability to manipulate a bullpen. So he's excellent. And again, I think on the other side, a guy like Torrey has earned his reputation as someone that sets a good tone, that creates culture. Mike Hazen's been pretty overt about, both these teams lost 100 games. The Diamondbacks lost 110 2 years ago. And I asked him, I wasn't implying that he shouldn't have, but I was asking him, like, why'd you stay with him? He's like, because it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
I gave him a bad roster. I mean, if he can't get down with that level of accountability, I don't know what to tell you.
And two other things that are worth mentioning here, we talk about the managers. But the Diamondbacks also have, I think, people who are regarded within the sport as superstar coaches. Brent Strom, the pitching coach with the Diamondbacks, who was with the Astros before, the way they pitch the Phillies. I think that, it's not necessarily a surprise that the Diamondbacks were in a good position there. And then you know this, the guy who's known as the best base running coach in all of baseball is the first base coach for the Diamondbacks, and Dave McKay. Yep. And, the expectation is that, that the Diamondbacks are going to look to run aggressively in this series. So I got two more manager questions before you go. Speaking of future Hall of Famers, Dusty Baker.
Yep.
Give me a Dusty Baker, memory, thought, story that you you tell people. I can give you one to buy a little time for you. Okay. A couple years ago, it was in 2022, they trade for Trey Mancini. And he is brought by the front office over to take over at first base because the front office didn't like Yuli Gurriel, and Trey Mancini was terrible for them. He batted under 200. He really struggled. And so in the end, Dusty, at the end of the year, starts playing Yuli Gurriel, and Trey, who's a great guy, felt terrible about it. Well, they play the Yankees in the American League Championship Series, and Dusty, as he's wont to do, he is at St. Patrick's Cathedral, and he's thinking of his players, and he sees some prayer beads, and he's thinking, okay, who on the team would like this? And he's thinking, I don't know if Mancini's Catholic, but I think there's a good chance because he went to Notre Dame, and his last name ends with an I, so he picks up some prayer beads. And I remember Trey Mancini telling me that story and being so touched at a time when he was mostly irrelevant on that team, Dusty Baker is thinking of him. And how much that meant to him, that he wasn't just this afterthought on that team. That's one of the stories for me that encapsulates Dusty.
I don't think my stories for Dusty is just, it's more about like my personal encounters. I got to work with him multiple games on the air, which was really cool. We actually had a game. I remember doing a TV game with him where we were in St. Louis and a piece of like trash rolled on the field and the player grabbed it on the infield and put it in his pocket. And he was like, no. And I'm like, what? And he's like, that's bad luck. And I'd never heard that before. I would say my two Dusty Baker things would be this. Number one, it's anecdotal, but I think if you were to go around and try to find players that have something bad to say about Dusty Baker, you'd have a really hard time. Everybody loves playing for him. And there's something to that. They're just it. Like, they just love playing for him. And I think that that's what so many front offices are trying to capture. You're trying to capture that, a leader that everybody believes in. And I would say that that is the way players, as a general idea in my experience, feel about Dusty Baker. And then the other one that was cool is Dusty's worn those wristbands forever. And he told me a story about playing he was managing the Giants, and Billy Williams was coaching for the Cubs, and he changes them if they lose. So they have they have his face on them, but they have different color schemes, and they lost like six or seven in a row, and he kept changing the wristbands. And he said the great story about the wristbands is Billy Williams, when they're playing the Cubs, was like, yo, man, you fixing to run out of colors because you don't have anything left on those wristbands. And a couple years ago, I think the wristbands are just the coolest thing. But we did a game on my birthday on TV, and Sut had told him, and he gave me one of his wristbands for my birthday, which I still have.
That's awesome.
Like, one of the only things I have, in some regard like that.
So, and I would say this too, just to follow up on your point, and you can't find a player who say something bad about Dusty. I also never heard anyone say that his teams didn't play hard. Like, his teams always had a reputation as playing hard.
Yep.
All right, last one before you go, about a manager. You know Craig Counsell better than anybody that I know in the media. And the big question about Counsell, as he goes through this process of interviewing the Mets, would he actually leave the Midwest to go manage in New York, where presumably he would get a monster contract.
Yes.
What's your best guess?
Would he? Yes, he would. I would say, he would. I think, what do I think is going to happen? I'm not sure. I think that my guess is that if the owner of the Brewers wants to keep him, he can keep him.
Yeah, so here's my read on it. I've heard around the edges that it's important for Council to set new benchmarks for managers. He's in a position of leverage right now, generally speaking, regarded as, you know, one of the top two or three managers in the sport. He's a free agent. He can talk to the Mets. He presumably can ask the Mets for a lot of money. I'm guessing he's going to get a tremendous offer from the Mets at some point, which he can then take back to the Brewers, or he could take to the Astros or the Angels or one of these teams and say, hey, this is what I have on the table. What are you going to do about that? And I guess that's the big question at that point. What is Mark Attanasio, the owner of the Brewers, if, and I'm just pulling the numbers out of the air, if the Mets offer him $8 to $10 million a year, how far will Mark Attanasio go? My instinct, by the way, because, boy, what a coup for the Astros if they could be the team to land Craig Council. We've seen Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, absolutely hold the line on salaries with players. I can't imagine him chasing big numbers to hire Craig Council. That's just my instinct. I have nothing to base that on. What do you think?
Yeah, and then also, they certainly have in Jose Espada a pretty good in-house candidate.
Yeah.
I would say all of that. I would say, yeah, I think that's fair in terms of Jim Crane, but I don't know enough in that regard.
Okay. All right. Well, you do know a lot about calling by play-by-play, and you'll be on the call tonight, Book. I'll see you in a bit.
I'm excited. Be good to work with you, brother. 0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com, who is down here in Arlington. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I had a great welcome to Texas moment yesterday. Getting some lunch after arriving. You know, you can find a good place on Yelp. You order online, and it says they have cheese enchiladas. I'm vegetarian, not sure I've mentioned that before. So I order the cheese enchiladas and think they're going to be, you know, enchiladas with cheese and either red sauce or green sauce. And they come with a nice little, meat sauce on top of them. So that was a welcome to Texas moment for me.
And you sent it back, right? You said, no, I asked for cheese enchilada, which, by the way, this is no joke, Sarah. Last week when I was here for the Astros and the Rangers, that's exactly what I ordered, was cheese enchilada. So we're very similar in that regard.
I love that. I did not. It was takeout. There were chips. I had plenty of lunch, but the moment we opened it, it was so clear. It was not my normal East Coast cheese enchiladas. I was like, oh, yep, I am in Texas now.
It probably was armadillo meat. That would be my guess. So as always, Sarah, I have to chase you down to get details of you being honored. There's a scholarship I saw on Twitter being named in your honor.
There is. I was so honored when Scott Busch was in charge of SABR, the Society for American Baseball Research, approached me about this summer. So there is a scholarship in my name for female students who are looking to get into baseball research. I believe they will pay for someone to be registered to the SABR conference, which happens in March, and also their analyst certification courses. So this is just to encourage and help women who are looking for a way to get into baseball research and analytics to do so. And when Scott approached me and talked about how I often tweet, you know, good, more, please, when a woman gets to do something
they should be getting to do anyway, but it's the first or whatever it may be. And he said he was inspired by that. So I was totally blown away by it. And then, yes, I told absolutely nobody about it. And then the tweet went out and I got on a plane and I didn't even get to react to it until afterwards. So, of course, a lot of people who know me were texting like, wait, what? What is this? So there you go.
Yeah, you stole my line. I was going to say when you talked about it, I was going to go, more please, more please.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So one of the really fun things with this World Series is that Will Smith was on Atlanta in 2021 and was on the Astros last year. Is on Bruce Bochy's Rangers this year. So he is going to become the third player to appear on the World Series roster in three straight seasons for three different teams, joining Don Baylor, who was on the 86 Red Sox, 87 Twins, and 88 A's, and Eric Hinsky, who was on the 07 Red Sox, 08 Rays, and 09 Yankees. But none of them won that World Series in each of those three. So he would be the first to win a World Series in three straight years with three different teams. And I actually looked into this further because often, as we know, my first thought has always been Jim Molina in 2010. Guys can win a ring even if they're not on the World Series roster, right? So Benji Molina was traded in 2010 to the Rangers to give Buster Posey that starting job. They end up facing them in the World Series, and he was going to get a ring either way because he had been on both teams. So even if we use the absolute broadest definition of winning a ring, playing one regular season game for the team that won the World Series, still, nobody has done what Will Smith has a chance to do if the Rangers win the World Series.
Number two
is also going to be three. So with Bob Melvin being announced as the Giants manager the other day, he will now have managed three NL West teams, the Diamondbacks, the Padres, and now the Giants. He is going to be the first manager to manage three teams in the same division since we split to these three divisions per league in 1994. And I just think that's so perfect for him. He's a West Coast guy, and here he is rounding up the NL West.
Number one
is 1922. We have a year. So you and I were texting about this about a week ago as you were working on your story about Dusty Baker. And you asked me, hey, who is the oldest guy that Dusty Baker faced? Not, oh, oldest at the time he faced him, but oldest in the history of the world. The longest ago birth date of anyone who he faced. And my answer was someone born on July 26th, 1922, and that is, which again, I don't even need to say the name, it's already incredible, and it is quite Wilhelm. So we looked into that, and I had that on my mind over the last week. And then yesterday, I realized I was thinking of Evan Carter, who was a rookie who they had just faced in the ALCS, and I was wondering who is the youngest that he has faced as a manager. And the answer was Jason Dominguez, who was born February 7th, 2003. So Dusty Baker faced someone born in 1922 as a player and someone born in 2003 as a manager. I just think it's an amazing way to show how much of the baseball world he spans.
I absolutely love that statistic, because it just shows such a range. I mean, I've used the line, and I've been on radio this week about him. He's sort of like baseball's Forrest Gump. He saw everything. He knows everybody. He can tell you stories about everyone. And other people have stories about him. I thought you would like this story, Sarah. Yesterday, I reached out to Jay Bruce, who, of course, played for him with the Cincinnati Reds. And I said, basically, tell me about Dusty. And he had this great story about how Dusty, you know, he would always sort of pop into the clubhouse. He'd be talking to guys. And if he had a sense that someone was down or having a tough time, that player would walk to his locker and find a plate of food. You know, Dusty, in every place that they would go, he'd have a special meal brought in wherever his teams were playing. And he would have a meal specially arranged for that player and put on his plate, that plate of food, put on the chair in front of his locker just to make him feel as if he was seen. It was one of the coolest stories I've ever heard about a manager. What do you think?
I love that. That's one of the love languages. You know, for some people it's food. And that's such a perfect way to show that you're being thought of, that you've got this. And it's also practical, right? Being able to get them some good energy and get them back on the right track. So that's so perfect. I love it. It's amazing. I mean, as I said, 1922 to 2002 means that we will be hearing Dusty Baker stories that we haven't heard before like that forever. And I love that so much. I mean, this isn't nearly on the same level, but I have a colleague named Will Frazier in MLB. He's a great member of our social team. He's a huge Reds fan, and he interned for the team in social media. Back when Dusty was there, so more than 10 years ago, and he posted something on Instagram just saying, thanks for being so kind to the scared little social media intern. And you think about back then when we didn't even realize the power of social media in nearly the same way. And of course, Dusty was great to him. So just knowing that this goes for everyone he has interacted with is really incredible for me.
Yeah, he has touched the lives of so many people. And that's why, you know, yesterday when I tweeted out the story that I wrote on him, people are like, well, he didn't handle the bullpen right in Game 7, or, you know, he didn't mess up here. And you're like, you are missing the point of why this guy managed for so long and players responded to him. And I never heard this about a Dusty Baker team, that it didn't play hard. All of his teams were always known as playing hard. And I think that's, in part because of how Dusty treated his guys. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Sarah, I get to see you at the ballpark later.
I know. I can't wait. Thank you so much for having me.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
And Himbo, of course, is Paul Imbecides, a right-hand man for Mike Greenberg on the show Get Up and on his radio show. And Himbo, I got to give you credit. Your Phillies were knocked out just a few days ago, but you've recovered. You're moving on. I would have guessed that we sounded more like one of those Phillies fans that we saw on that video. I'm sure you've seen it as they're exiting the park after losing Game 7. And they're all just like, trade everybody, F the players. Trey Turner, he's a joke going on. You rose above that, Himbo.
Well, I rose above that merely because no one caught me on camera after the game. But had they done so, I would now be your favorite ex-ESPN employee. Well, look, my darkness retreat lasted for 48 hours. I've since been able to emerge from the darkness and discover the fact that we actually have a pretty compelling World Series on our hands. And I'll be able to watch it a little bit, obviously, less emotionally than I would had the Phillies been in. And so I have a clear-eyed, objective look at the World Series buzzer with all the numbers that you need to know, hopefully some numbers that will make you some money, too.
All right. You went into Aaron Rodgers' cabin, a little incense you lit in there, and now you've emerged to give us all your information. Okay, three things the Diamondbacks have to do to upset the Rangers.
Number one is they have to create runs on the bases. During the regular season, not only did they rank second in stolen bases, but they ranked second in stolen base efficiency. This is a club that ranked 22nd in home runs. So that's the profile. Like, that's how they like to generate runs. Against the Phillies, they stole 9 bases in the 4 wins and none in the 3 losses against Jordan Montgomery, against Max Scherzer, and against Aroldis Chapman. I think they should run, baby, run. Number two, Zach Gallen has to pitch like the ace that he is. I mean, he was the best starter on either of these teams during the regular season. It was 4.5 WAR, a 4.5-1 strikeout to walk rate. But he allowed 9 runs and 5 homers in 11 innings against the Phillies. They lost both of those games. They got lucky. That's not a strategy. Zach Gallen needs to pitch a lot better if Arizona is going to spring the upset here. And three, Buster, Arizona has to build a bridge to their best 3 relievers. Ginkle, Thompson, and Seawald have combined to allow 3 runs in 27 2/3 innings. The Rangers, meanwhile, have a 971 OPS in innings 4 through 6, and 42% of their scoring have come in those 3 innings. What they're doing, they're wrecking your fatigue starter, and they're wrecking your lesser reliever. The Diamondbacks have to build a bridge in those innings to those 3 studs at the back end of their bullpen.
All right, you and I, very like-minded in this. You sent me your notes that you wanted to talk about last night. I did SportsCenter this morning, and they talked about the, you know, what the Diamondbacks knew to win, and I talked about their running game. They were successful, 16 of 19 attempts in the playoffs going into this. As you mentioned, they're 9 for 9 against the Phillies. You can run on Jordan Montgomery, allowed 14 of 15 steals versus the attempts during the regular season. You can run a Nathan Eovaldi, who's cleaned that up to some degree of his game. So there's going to be opportunity there for sure. Zach Gallen, an interesting, just to follow up on what you said and what he needs to do, he's got to pitch backwards. He's got to land his curveball. He's got to land his changeup. He's got to land his cutter, because this team, absolutely, the Rangers, destroys mediocre fastballs. Average fastball velocity for Zach Gallen, 93.6 miles per hour. And I think I saw Jeff Passan, he had a note that during the postseason, the Rangers in against velocity, 91 to 95 miles per hour in this postseason, are batting .328 with a .629 slugging percentage. So Zach Gallen needs to land his secondary stuff. All right, give me 3 long shot World Series bets that you like.
Look, baseball history is littered with unlikely World Series heroes. Guys like Steve Pierce and David Freese and David Eckstein and Scott Brosius, and the list goes on and on and on. So what I've done is identify 3 bets that are 15-1 or longer if you're inclined to bet on such things, Buster. I like Nathan Eovaldi at 18-1 to win World Series MVP, because he might get 3 bites at the apple. He might get 2 starts and potentially a relief appearance. This is a guy that's gotten 18 outs in all 4 of his starts this postseason. He's become very trustworthy. I think he's got a shot to do this. At 22-1.
Hold on. Before you move on, remember the Nathan Eovaldi, if you mentioned 3 shots the apple, he'll start game 1, you know, could start game 5. And you know that if you get to a game 7, that he'll be going into Bochy's office, Madison Bumgarner like, and he'll be the guy holding his spike, say, "I'm ready to go, Skip."
I totally agree. And that could be like the last sort of defining image of the World Series, and hence why I think he could win the MVP. I also like Gabby Moreno at 22-1. I think this could be largely narrative driven, but if Arizona does wind up winning, I think you could do a lot worse than a 23-year-old catcher hitting in the middle of the lineup. He's got 9 RBIs in 12 games. If that offense gets rolling, I could see him being a big reason why, and I think they'll be touting his age and his skill a lot on the broadcast.
And I would say this about Gabby Moreno. All the televisions in Toronto will be like, people will, they'll have to turn it off because they'll be so sad thinking that they do not have Gabby Moreno going forward. It's unbelievable that he was traded.
Yes, and that's going to be one that they regret for a long time. I also want to give you one more, and that's Nathaniel Lowe at 25-1. So, Buster, 90% of Diamondbacks innings this postseason have been thrown by righties. That's what they do. And so I think when you look at Lowe, you look at Evan Carter, you look at Corey Seager, that's a real opportunity for Rangers lefties to mash. And Nathaniel Lowe has the most pronounced sort of platoon splits among those. I could see him having a really, really, really big series and being sort of the unlikely hero and could win MVP.
I had a great conversation with him the other day. I will report he is a huge baseball fan. We do always talk about this, you know, which baseball players are baseball fans. He is a huge baseball fan. And something to think about regarding the Arizona bullpen. Paul Sewald has been amazing this postseason. Maybe the MVP of that team. 8 innings, 3 hits, 11 strikeouts, no runs allowed. Well, the Rangers hitters have at least seen him because he's been in the American League West. You know, Adolis Garcia has had success against him in the past. I think Corey Seager's hitless, but he's also drawn 3 walks, like 0-for-5 and 3 walks. But they've at least seen him. You got the feeling some of the National League teams that saw him, it's just there was not a comfort level with those guys with that riding fastball. All right, Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, in your mind, are in rarefied air.
Yeah, I think you're going to really like this. So the date that changed everything for the Texas Rangers was December 1st of 2021. The day that they signed Corey Seager and Marcus Semien, that changed everything. And by no means could you say that a pair of players making $500 million are underpaid, but I'll say that they have been worth every penny, especially living in a world in which mega contracts are often bad investments, as you and I have discussed many times. So this year for Marcus Semien, it was 7.4 WAR, and for Seager, it was 6.9. Here's how I'll contextualize that. This is the 119th playing of the World Series, and thus these are the 237th and 238th teams to get there. So 238 teams to play in the World Series. But Buster, this is only the fourth team out of those 238 that reached the World Series with a second baseman and a shortstop that each had at least 6 wins above replacement that season. You've heard of all the others. In 2017, it was Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa. In 1949, it was Pee Wee Reese and Jackie Robinson. And in 1948, it was Lou Boudreau and Joe Gordon. Buster, wow. It is not by any means a stretch to say that this team is about as strong up the middle as any team has been historically. And in my judgment, at least, those two guys provide the foundation of this sort of renaissance, this iteration of Texas Rangers baseball.
They have been remarkable. And, you know, hats off. We always talk about, you know, teams that tank like the Oakland Athletics this year. Hats off to Ray Davis, 81-year-old owner of the Texas Rangers, who made up his mind that he wants to have a winning team. And so he gave Chris Young his checkbook and said, go get some good players. It'll be really interesting to me to see how aggressive Semien and Seager are right off the bat. And you saw during that Houston series, they're constantly swinging at the first pitch. Yeah. It felt like they were just hunting fastballs. And I mentioned about Zach Gallen, like he's got to throw his curveball, you know, first pitch. He's got to throw his changeup first pitch. And you know that the Rangers hitters, especially experienced guys like Semien and Seager, they're going to be aware of that, Hembo.
Oh, no question about it. The approach of this thing is going to be wild. Like Adolis Garcia, for example, still hasn't walked yet this postseason. I think there is an opportunity. There is definitely an opportunity for Diamondbacks pitchers to nibble and to induce that chase. That's sort of the genius of baseball, like the matchup within the game, that kind of stuff. The Phillies, very early on in that series, had it figured out against those pitchers. And then as the series evolved, the Diamondbacks staff adjusted back. That's the genius here. I actually think if Zach Gallen can go out there and win game one tonight, or at least pitch well enough for the Diamondbacks to win game one tonight, they all of a sudden become in the driver's seat because they haven't gotten anything from that guy, and they have built up this level of confidence. This series, more than most, I think game one will go a long, long way. And it would not surprise me at all if Arizona shocked the world again. I'm sticking with my original pick. Rangers in six is what I'm sticking to. But the more research I have done, especially in providing that sort of formula, that 3-point checklist for them to do it, I won't be surprised if in a week from now we're talking about an awfully different series than we may have suspected.
All right, Hembo. Thanks for digging in, and I appreciate it.
Later, friends.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Right. Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing?
World Series time, Buster. It is great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Congratulations on being the only person to pick the Rangers and Diamondbacks in the World Series before the year started. You're a genius.
Well, Buster, that trip I took to Vegas a couple of weeks ago, you were wondering what that was for. I could do it down the street from me at a casino. But anyway, what an unlikely World Series matchup. And I can't help but think, for those of us who have been around a while, is this the most unlikely World Series matchup perhaps since 1991 when the Twins and the Braves met?
Oh, boy. I had this conversation yesterday about improbable World Series champions, and see if you, because you love baseball history. I think that if the Diamondbacks win the World Series, they will be the most improbable World Series champion of all time, because, you know, the Boston Braves, 1914, famous, the Miracle Braves, they didn't have to go through multiple rounds of playoffs. They went right into the World Series. The 69 Mets, the Dodgers, the 88 Dodgers, the team that I followed, they had one National League Championship Series and then they moved on. This team has gone through the Brewers, the Dodgers, the Phillies. If they win the World Series after an 84-win regular season, to me, the most improbable champion of all time. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I think that's why you've got to give all the props in the world to Arizona for having navigated what they have navigated to this point. And the whole thing speaks to the fact that the tournament is a very different thing. And you can't help but think about all of those Yankee championship teams of 1928 and 1932 and 1930, blah, 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 blah. They would have gotten tripped up at some point along the way.
At some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like
a best of three, a best of five.
Yeah.
All the different rounds. I mean, players, well, sometimes when we talk about all-time, hit leaders, Jeter has 200 hits and people say, well, he had the advantage of being in so many rounds. Well, you know what? His team won, but they played in five World Series in 6 years and they got through those rounds.
Yeah.
They won four World Series in the time. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Give me a prediction from you for this World Series.
Wow, such an unlikely matchup, and I have no sense of rock solid prediction here, but I'll take Rangers in six. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was Diamondbacks in six or seven. I just think the Rangers, Eboldi. That's my call.
Yeah, that's impressive. You're picking the Rangers in six. Your preseason call. I respect that. Over the Diamondbacks. All right, let's get to this week's Forgotten Field.
All right, Buster. On July 5th, 1991, National League owners unanimously voted to approve Denver as one of two expansion clubs that would begin play in 1993. The Colorado Rockies played two seasons at Denver's Mile High Stadium as Coors Field was being constructed, and they made their home debut there on April 9th, 1993, against the Montreal Expos, in front of 80,227 fans, Buster, the largest home opener in the history of baseball. Colorado's MLB tenure predictably began with an offensive explosion. The Rockies scored four runs in the first inning and cruised to an 11-4 victory, which began with a four-run first-inning outburst, including an Eric Young leadoff blast.
Todd, pause right there. Guess who's going to be on the podcast on Monday?
Who?
Eric Young.
Oh, my God. Well, you could tell him that we – how great is that?
I highlighted him right there, but go on.
Yeah, 93 Rockies. Wow. The club set all kinds of attendance records in 1993, drawing 4,483,350 fans in 79 home dates, which is an average of 55,350 per game. Can you imagine? They did even better the following year, averaging 56,094 during the strike-shortened 1994 season. The NFL's Denver Broncos played there for 40 years, but Mile High was built to accommodate professional baseball. Originally called Bears Stadium, it housed the minor league Denver Bears beginning in 1948. It was constructed on the site of a dump just west of what would eventually become I-25. Mile High had its share of memorable sporting moments, including the 1983 USFL Championship game and a 1979 exhibition bout between Broncos defensive end Lyle Alzado and Muhammad Ali. The stadium's name was rooted in fact, and its 5,280-foot elevation served as witness to a Titanic 582-foot home run in 1987, hit by the Denver Zephyrs' Joey Meyer. Pope John Paul II celebrated a mass there in August 1993 while the Rockies were on the road in Houston. Mile High's mammoth 9-million-pound East Grandstand was converted from football to baseball and back via a thin film of water. A series of water-lubricated hydrostatic rubber pads, Buster, were pressurized, and the seating section was lifted and moved 145 feet in a matter of hours. Rockies games at Mile High featured the Rock Pile, a popular left center field bleacher section whose 1,700 seats went for $1 apiece. The flooring there was made of steel sheeting, and when the fans stomped their feet, it resulted in a deafening roar. Like most expansion teams, the Rockies stumbled through their first couple of seasons, but by the time they reached Coors Field in 1995, they were a playoff team. The Broncos continued to play there until the end of the 2000 NFL season, and the venue was demolished during the winter of 2002. If you go to a Broncos game at Empower Field at Mile High, make sure to head to parking lot J, where a home plate is painted into the pavement facing the stadium that replaced the original Mile High Stadium, the first home of the Colorado Rockies and this week's Forgotten Field.
I went to games in Mile High when in my first years of covering the San Diego Padres in 93 and 94, and I must say it was an incredible sight to see fans sitting so far from home plate and just being amazed by the passion of the fan base. And I was thinking about this as you were talking. You know, we talk about Phillies fans, and rightly so, about their passion, you know, in other cities. Cardinals historically have had a great following. I think the Brewers have a great following. The Rockies fans, I think, deserve a ton of credit because it's probably the franchise with the least amount of hope year to year because of the constant problems they have in maintaining, fostering pitching within that organization. And yet people go there consistently to go watch the team play. They love baseball there.
They do. And it's a great stadium. You and I were out there for the All-Star game just a couple of years ago. The stadium has aged well. The neighborhood has come up around it. And to your point, the fan base has always embraced this franchise, who had a great run in 2007 and then got smoked by the Red Sox in the World Series. And you're right. They deserve more. And when the World Series eventually comes back to Colorado, and it's going to happen, keep the faith alive. That place will go nuts. You're absolutely right. Great baseball market, traditional baseball market. And maybe they'll work up some kind of a rivalry with the Salt Lake, whatever they're going to be, expansion club.
The Buzz, right? or whatever. Yeah,
100%. Exactly.
All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right. It's getting late early over here. This club was the first to receive World Series rings that contained more than one diamond. Was it A, the 1975 Cincinnati Reds? Was it B, the 1957 Milwaukee Braves? Was it C, the 1977 New York Yankees? Or was it D, the 1965 Los Angeles Dodgers? First club to receive World Series rings that contained more than one diamond. The 75 Reds, 57 Braves, 77 Yankees, or 65 Dodgers?
So immediately I go to which owners were cheap. You know, which owners would do that? And I don't know if that's a good barometer because I don't know the answer to this one. I also understand how George Steinbrenner liked to be gaudy. So I'm going to pick the 1977 New York Yankees. Sarah, I'm going to let you go last. It's been a tough week for you as a lifelong Phillies fan of 1 year. Taylor, you go second.
Damn, we are in sync, Buster. I was thinking the exact same thing with the Yankees, but I need to make up some ground. So I'm going to go with the Dodgers.
Oh, I was debating between the Yankees or the Dodgers. So I'm going to actually I'll go Reds. Why not?
Well, Buster, your instincts were correct because it was the 77 Yankees. And in researching this question, and I had totally forgotten about this, Cheap Charlie Finley and the Oakland A's had perhaps the most janky, unlocks World Series rings imaginable toward the end of their run. But congratulations, Buster, solidifying a championship year.
Yeah, anybody who got I say this without any knowledge whatsoever, of course, I'm completely joking. Anybody who got a championship ring from Charlie Finley better check the diamond, right? It probably was fake. Knowing how Charlie Finley operated his team, Todd, would you back me up on that one?
Well, Buster, to further back you up on that, my understanding is that one of those World Series rings, I'm not sure if it was 73 or 74, actually had no diamonds. It was like a green stone that looked like something that you got in the Jostens catalog for your high school graduation.
Yeah, but and you mentioned the Reds, and I was thinking, no, was Marge Schott in charge of the team? Because if she had been in charge of the team at that time, when they won the World Series in 75 and 76, that would have also been an issue. You know, she was famous for not compensating scouts for their phone calls when they were on the road. Like if you put in, call back to the office during the trade deadline, $1.20, rejected. Like she was famous for being really cheap. So that's a good barometer when we talk about it. Let me put it this way. If the 2023 Oakland Athletics won the World Series, I don't think we'd be talking about gaudy rings, Taylor.
Probably not. Maybe they'd make like a nice memento, like the concrete from the stadium that they're trying to knock down.
Right. Exactly. And they would have some image of Las Vegas, even though they won the championship for the Athletics in Oakland. All right, Todd. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. Andrew Campbell at Real Cam Drew writes in, low ratings, two weak teams, who cares? Buster, if this year's World Series matchup was Astros-Dodgers or Yankees-Phillies, everyone would be complaining about how there's no parity in the league. Does Major League Baseball have a fan problem?
No, I don't think they have a fan problem. It's called social media.
Yeah. Everyone just loves to complain.
Oh my gosh. The complaining. That's what I was saying. You know, when these teams are the best teams were getting knocked out, best regular season teams were getting knocked out early in the postseason, like just give them the choice on whether or not they want to host. That way we can avert, steer around the complaining, and I wasn't referring to players. I wasn't referring to front office people. I'm referring to fans. I'm tired of the complaining from fans about the structure.
Everyone wants to be mad about something.
Yep.
Ben Schultz, 12, writes in, Buster, what does the snakes and probable run do for Torey Lovello's stature? Is he now an elite manager? Top five? Seems to me we're witnessing the arrival of the next great manager. Ravi mentioned the other day, everyone has to start somewhere.
Right. I agree. I mean, you win a World Series, it changes the perception of everything. I mean, for years, Bruce Bochy, was known within the sport among front office people as being a good manager. And then he got run out of San Diego by Sandy Alderson. He was with the Giants for what, like 5 years? They didn't win a championship. And then they went in 2010 and 12 and 14. And now we're talking about him in the conversation as being arguably one of the greatest managers of all time.
Whew, what a statement. Brian Simp at Yo B Simp writes in, I'm a teacher in the Dallas suburbs and my students are obviously huge Rangers fans. For them, beating the Astros seemed like it was the most important thing. Can the Rangers get themselves back up to that high intensity against the D-backs?
No doubt about it, Brian. Look, we talked about this since the first week of the season, how when you're around the Rangers, my God, they're serious professionals. And forgive me if I told the story earlier in the week. I've mentioned it on radio a couple times. You guys remember early in the year when you had those home run celebrations teams, the Homer Hose and the, mm-hmm. The Trident with the Mariners, which is great. And what I'm going to say is not to criticize any of the teams. I thought those were super fun. But I reached out to the Rangers as that started. And I was like, hey, what are you guys doing for home run celebrations? And the response I got was like, we don't do that crap. Like, this is a serious group of professionals, and you could see it with the way they play. You talk to Marcus Semien, he almost never cracks a smile. Corey Seager's, so serious. Boch, he's got the, what's the name of the actor who's on Lonesome Dove? He's got that voice going. Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott voice going. They will absolutely be up for this. Nathan Eovaldi will be up for this. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Let's go to RL Foxy T-Rex. He writes in, Sarah Langs mentioned the Diamondbacks losing streak from July 2nd to August 11th. They went 7-25, meaning they were 77-53, a 0.592 win percentage the rest of the way. Despite a historic slump, why did no one look at those numbers and think this team could be dangerous?
I don't know. I think you can find a lot of those type of streaks within every season for teams that wind up being in the 80-90 win range, which is why among people who've been doing it a long time, managers, veteran players, they don't necessarily overreact. I think I heard him telling this story in ESPN radio last week that in one stretch, the the Rangers went like 10-20. And Chris Young looked at Bochy and said, "Now, why did you want to come back and do this again?" Because their slide was so precipitous. I think that that's part of it. And also, we saw the Diamondbacks down the stretch. They looked tired. Yep. We told the story about how Torey Lovello brought Dustin Pedroia in to speak to the players to get them all jazzed up as they came down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's picking a block of time there, but like they slumped hard, and then they were playing like a little above average. Like that's what it took to get
average. Well, like
when you look at the rest of the teams, yeah, I mean, look at all the teams they were competing against. Like it was a little bit of a clown show to sneak on in there. So they were the best of that bunch. So I can understand why you could look at that team at that time and be like, how are they dangerous?
You know, it's interesting. I called Kim Ng on the eve of the playoffs after the Marlins made it. And I, you know, asked her the question, why did, because the Marlins beginning of the second half, they lost 8 straight games coming out of the All-Star break. And so I asked her, what compelled you to go and trade for those players? And she, like, I could hear in her voice, this incredulous, like, what are you talking about? You were one of the best teams in the National League in the first half. 8 games of results, like that didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of cool how competitive she was. And that answer, like, come on.
Let's go. Last one for today. Louisville Slugger writes in, will Terry Francona and Dusty Baker be part of the same Hall of Fame class? If so, how awesome will that be? Yeah, baby.
Man, great people, great speeches. We talk about, what do you root for? Root for great stuff to happen to good people, and you root for great games. Well, that'll be fun to watch Dusty and Francona, if in fact they are part of the same class.
All right, there you have it. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter while you're watching these games over the weekend, and we'll be back on Monday to recap all the action. Very excited, Buster.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And as I mentioned, we're going to have Eric Young on with us, and we've got to work through some of the others who are going to join us. But Eric Young will bring great perspective on what's happened in the World Series so far. And we're going to talk about managerial candidacy. All right, that's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Boog, Sarah, Hembo, Todd, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.